Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Israel's tribes today. Where are they located in the world? We'll come back to that right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, and you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, and a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words that say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts," unquote. But in 1933, Franklin D. Roosevelt took our gold away from us, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? If you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school here at the law school twice a year. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. You can do it at home. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Hey, when you went to Sunday school, do you remember somebody telling you about the lost tribes of Israel? You ever heard that story before? You ever heard that statement? Lost tribes. It almost sounds like a bunch of lost Indian tribes down in the Amazon basin, doesn't it? Well, Stephen Collins, you've heard me review some of his books in the past, has just completed a new book called The Lost Israel Found. It's not the, it's just actually Israel's Tribes Today. Well, Israel's Tribes Today is a book that identifies the modern location of the lost 10 tribes of Israel, such as Holland, France, Scandinavia, Denmark, South Africa, the United States, and Great Britain. And I'm going to review this book for you. Review it. It's a dynamite piece of literature. It probably is the best book of the series, and that's not all. This guy is probably the number one author and the number one authority on this subject of British Israelism, British Israel, the Lost Ten Tribes. The first guy that I ever heard that wrote a book on the subject was J.H. Allen back in 1907, Judah's Scepter and Joseph's Birthright. Hell of a good book. It covers, you know, the basics, but it doesn't have the kind of in-depth scientific and historical information that Collins has. I'll give you Collins' name and address and the price of the book as we progress along, but listen to this. Most of the efforts to locate the lost house of Israel have failed because of erroneous assumptions. First sentence. Searchers assume that the supposedly lost 10 tribes of Israel would be found in isolated little bands of people. However, the first chapter of Hosea and other biblical prophecies foretold that the nations of the 10 tribes would be found among the wealthy and powerful nations with large populations. This book identifies the modern house of Israel as those nations descending from the Goths, Saxons, Germans, and related peoples who migrated into Europe from Asia after the fall of Parthia and Scythia. They have enjoyed national prominence, power, prosperity, and as the primary recipients of the divine birthright blessings of the Abrahamic covenant, and many nations have Israelite roots in whole or in part. Not only did they retain Semitic Israelite names and customs, but many of the tribal and the clan names of the 10 tribes of Israel are found among them. This book presents exciting new research and over 140 maps, charts, and illustrations to provide convincing evidence concerning the Israelite origin of large modern nations today in the 21st century. The final portion of this book utilizes biblical prophecies about the tribes of Israel, as well as evidence from secular history to identify the descendants of each tribe in the modern world. Readers may marvel at how specifically the prophecies have been fulfilled among modern nations today, and that these nations even now enjoy the promised blessings of the Abrahamic covenant. With the substantial body of evidence laid out in this book, their Israelite origin and character is impossible to miss. A fellow by the name of Alex Haley back in the 1970s wrote a book called Roots. Some of you may remember that name, Roots. He was a black fellow. He worked for the Coast Guard, I think, for about 30 years, and when he retired from the Coast Guard, he got busy and started looking up his ancestors to find out where they came from. He traced them all the way back to Africa. He did a hell of a job. It was actually serialized on television for about a week. I didn't read the book, but I did see the television series. It was gripping, absolutely gripping. And I think that all of us, I speak for myself here, but I think all of us kind of have that hankering to know about great-granddad. And who was his father, and who was his father, and what did they do, and where did they come from? And, you know, you get to thinking about it, the Gordons come from Scotland. We can trace our ancestry back to David Bruce, who was the first king of Scotland in 1320. I haven't gone back any further than David Bruce, but we're an offshoot of that tribe of people that came from Scotland. The name Gordon is pretty prominent. You look it up in a heraldry book, and you'll find that we've got a shield and a motto, and we have a Gordon plaid. And so do the MacArthurs and the MacIntoshes. And these names, you know, Mac this and Mac that and MacDonalds and so on, those are Scots names. Those names trace back into antiquity. And there's a history that goes with those people. And when you read a book, you pick up a book on the Gordon clan, and you say, wow, I didn't know that. Look at these people 100, 200, 500 years ago, the ancestors of the Gordons, and here I am today, one of those descendants. Well, what about the tribes of Israel? What about Moses, who brought these 13 tribes out of Egypt? Remember that story? And they got out there in the desert, and they had all of these adventures and all of these exciting things happen that you read about in Sunday school. Remember those stories? What if you could trace your genealogy back and you found out that you were descended from Moses or Joshua or Daniel or David or some of those patriarchs, some of those biblical characters? That'd be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? Well, listen, this guy Stephen Collins has put this story together. Now listen to this. Ephraim and Manasseh, the birthright tribes. Ephraim and Manasseh were the chief tribes of the house of Israel, and the Bible offers much information about these two tribes. The tribe of Joseph was subdivided into the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. These are the two sons of Joseph who jointly received the birthright blessings described in Genesis 48, verse 16. Now, Joseph is a very well-known biblical personality, his coat of many colors, his being sold into slavery, and then framed by Potiphar's wife for a crime that he didn't commit. He was sent up on a bum rape rap, and that coat of many colors is called plaid today. And his promotion to be Egypt's leader under Pharaoh are often repeated biblical stories that we've all heard in Sunday school. As a youth, Joseph had dreams which foreshadowed that he would become the greatest among his brethren. It's in Genesis 37, verses 5 through 11. And he was the favorite son of Jacob, as we see in Genesis 37, verses 1 through 4. Now, unfortunately, Joseph was a little naive when he began to tell his family about these dreams without realizing that this would offend them. And as a result, his brothers developed a family hatred toward Joseph, and they later sold him into slavery to get rid of him. After Joseph was exalted to a rulership position in Egypt, he had to wrestle with feelings of vengeance as he tested his brothers incognito. Joseph came to see that his other brothers had in fact developed real remorse over what they had done to him. That's revealed in Genesis 42, verses 18 through 23, and this facilitated a reconciliation. When Joseph revealed himself to his brothers, they were scared speechless, as we see in Genesis 45, verse 3. They knew that Joseph exercised life and death powers in Egypt, and that they had the power to execute them or to sell all of them into slavery, as they had done to him. However, Joseph forgave them and magnanimously cared for them and their families. And this account shows that a merciful, magnanimous attitude toward former enemies was a core personality trait of Joseph and his descendants. This is a trait of being merciful to former enemies, and it also characterized Joseph's progeny, as we shall see as we progress along. Now, the birthright promises of the Abrahamic covenant included, first, a great nation, God's blessing of their friends, and the cursing of their enemies, and the ability to bless the other nations of the earth. That comes from Genesis 12, verses 2 and 3. Second, that there would be a great population growth in Genesis 13, verses 15 through 16. And third, the promise of growth into many nations, not just one, but many nations, in Genesis 17, verses 4 through 7. In Genesis 22, verses 16 through 18, God reiterated his promise of explosive population growth. And he added a second promise that Abraham's descendants would possess the gates of their enemies. That these birthright promises were passed from Isaac to Jacob with the following words that we read in Genesis 27, verses 26 through 29. God give thee of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth, and let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee, and cursed be everyone that curses thee, and blessed be he that blesses thee. Quite a blessing, wouldn't you say? Anybody that blesses you will be blessed, anybody that curses you will be cursed. Well, agricultural blessings were included in this birthright, including soil fertility, good surpluses of food, good climate, and the promise of dominance over all of the other nations around them. This promise of agricultural bounty indicates Joseph's descendants would live in the earth's temperate zones, which are most suited for agricultural surpluses. In Genesis 28, verse 14, God promised Abraham's seed, that's his children, his offspring, his descendants, that they would be as the dust of the earth. And you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. Now think about that for a moment. In Genesis 28:14, he says, you're going to be like the dust of the earth. Now that's not 300 tribal members of an Amazon, secret Amazon jungle tribe of Indians someplace. That's as the dust of the earth. That's like China or India or America or Great Britain. Millions of people. And he goes on to say, you'll spread abroad to the north, south, east, and west. Well, who are the people who have a common ancestry who occupy land in both the north and the southern hemisphere and all the way around the world, such as Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Rhodesia, Western Europe, the United States, Canada? You're starting to get the drift? Now, this shows that Jacob's descendants would not only have large populations, but that they would spread abroad all across the earth. And God again reaffirmed the promise of a huge population growth for Jacob's descendants in Genesis 35, verses 11 and 12. He added a promise that a nation and a company of nations shall be of thee. A nation and a company of nations. Now, the above promises were not conditioned on the obedience of the future generations that would receive these promised blessings. God gave these blessings to future descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob because of the obedience of these patriarchs. While all of Abraham's descendants would share these blessings, the lion's share of these blessings were inherited by the tribes of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. In Genesis chapter 48, Jacob, who was also called Israel, gave the birthright promises to Ephraim and Manasseh, the two sons of Joseph. They were each to be reckoned as individual tribes of the nation of Israel. That's why there's 13 tribes instead of 12. 12 sons turned into 13 tribes because the tribe descended from Jacob was divided in two. That's why one of them is referred to as the half-tribe of Manasseh. Well, when Jacob put his right hand on Ephraim's, that's Joseph's younger son, he made Ephraim the primary recipient of the blessing. Manasseh was the eldest son, but Jacob blessed him with the left hand, making him a joint but secondary recipient of this birthright promise. Symbolically, this meant that Ephraim inherited Joseph's status as one of the 12 tribes of Israel, but that Manasseh was grandfathered in as the 13th tribe of Israel. And Israel blessed them with these words. In verses 14 through 16, he said, Israel stretched out his right hand, and he laid it upon Ephraim's head, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head. And he said, well, let my name be named on them, and the names of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude. So, with these words, the birthright promise of the Abrahamic covenant was given to Ephraim and Manasseh. The other tribes of Israel were not destined to receive the fullness of this birthright blessing as were the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. Oh, they'd get some money, all right. They would get some of the inheritance, all right. They would become rich and powerful, all right, but not to the same degree, not to the full extent that Ephraim and Manasseh were to inherit. So Ephraim and Manasseh would become the most populous tribes of Israel, requiring the greatest amount of territory for their large populations. And it's vital to notice that this prophetic blessing involved the names Israel and Isaac being placed on the two tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. And for this reason, whenever the Bible after uses the term Israel in history or Bible prophecy, it often designates the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. After Israel went into captivity, the name Isaac was firmly placed on many of the Israelites in Asia, as they were called the Sakae, S-A-C-A-E, or the Saka, S-A-K-A, Saxons, S-A-X-O-N-E-S, and Saxons, S-A-X-O-N-S. In Scythia, Parthia, and Europe. Now notice the word Sakesne, S-A-C-A-S-E-N-E, at the gateway to the Caucasus Mountains in the lower portion of the map below, as well as Iberia, named after the Hebrew patriarch Eber. Iberia, the Iberian Peninsula. We call that Spain and Portugal today. Now, in the book of this series, we saw evidence, in the third book of this series, we saw evidence that Ephraim's clans formed the backbone of the tribes that united to form the Parthian Empire, while one of the dominant tribes of the Saki-Scythians was the Massagetae, the tribe of Manasseh. Even as the term House of Israel included the rest of the tribes of Israel who remained associated with Ephraim and Manasseh, the term Saki was also broadly applied to all of the related tribes of Israel which were led by Ephraim and Manasseh while they were in Parthia and Scythia in Asia. When the Scythians and the Parthians migrated to Europe, the names Saxe, S-A-C-H-S-E, or Saxons, or Saxons, S-A-A-C apostrophe S, sons, remained upon them as they settled in the British Isles. But this name has also remained on some related tribes who stayed on the mainland, such as Saxony in Germany, and Alsace, A-L-S-A-C-E, Alsace-Lorraine in France. In Genesis 48, verse 19, Jacob prophesied that Manasseh shall become a people, and he also shall be great, but stated that Ephraim's descendants shall be greater than Manasseh, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And with these words, Jacob gave to Manasseh and Ephraim the birthright blessing of Genesis 35, verse 11, that their tribes would eventually include a nation and a company of nations. Genesis 48, verse 19 foretold that the descendants of Ephraim would become the multitude of nations, while Manasseh's descendants would become a single great nation. The modern nations that have fulfilled these prophecies of the birthright tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh are England, the United States of America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. They easily fulfill the prophecies about large population, and when you combine the populations of these modern nations, they are by far the most numerous nations of the modern tribes of Israel. They have fulfilled the prophecy about becoming a great nation and a great company of nations. The single great nation is the United States of America, and the nations of the British Commonwealth, Great Britain, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand are the prophesied company of nations, and therefore the birthright prophecies identify the United States as Manasseh, and the nations of the British Commonwealth as identified as Ephraim, and even as Ephraim and Manasseh were brother tribes in ancient Israel, they are brother nations in the world today. Take a look at the war in Iraq, and you see the Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, the British, and the Americans working side by side. Well, it's true the Canadians kind of backed out on us on that Iraqi deal, but the rest of them are all into it right up to their eyebrows. Now, the American and English nations share a common language, a common heritage, a common culture, and they have rallied together as brothers in several very important conflicts, such as World War I and World War II, and the two wars in the Persian Gulf, the war against the Taliban in Afghanistan, fought as part of the global war on terrorism today, as George Bush calls it. Since Ephraim was to be the greater of the two and received its birthright blessing first, we should expect that Ephraim would receive his inheritance before Manasseh. History did indeed fulfill that expectation. Great Britain rose to international prominence long before the United States was even founded, and was a major international superpower for centuries before being eclipsed by the United States in the post-World War II period. At its zenith, the British Empire ruled over many more nations and a far greater geographic area than the United States does today or ever did. For a time, it was true that the sun never set on the British Empire, because the British Empire ruled much of the world, and at its zenith, it ruled over Great Britain, Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, many African nations, Egypt, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Ceylon, Burma, Singapore, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Eastern New Guinea, and many islands in Oceania. Ephraim, or Great Britain, was without question the most expansive empire in recorded history. And according to the 1943 edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, the British Empire once ruled 13 million square miles of the Earth's land surface. That was before British rule was extended over Palestine, Jordan, and Iraq after World War II. Britain's navies dominated the world seas as well. Britannia rules the waves was a common axiom in British glory days. The British Empire inherited the birthright promises of controlling the sea gates, or the gates of its enemies, strategic choke points such as the Suez Canal, Gibraltar, and the Cape of Good Hope. British ownership of the Falklands Islands controlled access around Cape Horn between the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans, and its colony in Singapore controlled the strategic Strait of Malacca between the Indian Ocean and the South China Sea. The British Empire continued the heritage of the ancient maritime empires of Israel, Phoenicia, and Carthage. Even as Israel's ancient Phoenician Empire had a small homeland centered in Canaan, the ruling over an entire network of colonies on other continents, so did Carthage in Great Britain. Ancient Israel and Carthage had a great advantage over their enemies, Greece and Rome. The advantage was by their control of Gibraltar, and so does Great Britain to this day. The United States of America, the tribe of Manasseh, began to inherit its birthright in the 20th century and especially after World War II. For decades, the British Empire and America were an unbeatable team, able to dominate the world in peacetime and in war. Ephraim had enjoyed ascendancy for centuries, but Manasseh became ascendant over Ephraim after World War II. At its height, the United States ruled over the Philippines, Puerto Rico, Alaska, and Hawaii, which later became states, Cuba, and various islands in Oceania. The United States also built and controlled the Panama Canal, one of the world's most strategic gates. And while the United States is more powerful than Great Britain in our modern world, the British Empire was greater in historical sense, and the United States today has troops based in more than 160 countries around the world. Now, while Great Britain sought to aggressively expand its empire, the United States has exhibited an isolationist tendency in its history and has not sought to rule a large empire. While the British used their armies to hold the conquered territory, America has typically withdrawn its armies quickly from conquered territory, and in both World War I and II, the Persian Gulf War and other conflicts, America has always exhibited no desire to control an extended empire of conquered territory, even though it easily had the power to do so. Well, boys and girls, hang on a second here. I've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, economics, history, health, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Remember to order yours. Please call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we do endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. And while we're at it, why don't we give you Stephen M. Collins' address. If you'd like to order this book, here's what I'd suggest. He's written 5 books in a series. This guy's dynamite. I sent him a $100 bill. He sent me all 5 books and he endorsed all of them. So I've got 5 of his books. They're all in paperback. They're all autographed for a $100 bill. They're about $20 a copy in round numbers. If you send a $100 bill to Stephen M. Collins, C-O-L-L-I-N-S, at 3901 Crescent Drive, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 57106. Tell him George Gordon sent you, and be sure to ask him to autograph the books. They might be worth some money someday. I'll tell you this, you'll never read another book like it. This guy has a talent for writing that not only makes the book interesting, it also is it's exciting reading, and it's just chock full with documentation, names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. I could walk into court and go argue this to the Supreme Court of the United States. I wouldn't have any qualms about walking into any court in front of any judge at any level in any judicial forum and using this book as the basis of my legal arguments, and I can prove it. Remember, that's Collins, Stephen M. Collins, 3901 Crescent Drive, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 57106. Now, the name of this book is Israel's Tribes Today. Israel's Tribes Today. He's got 5 books total, The Lost 10 Tribes of Israel, Israel's Lost Empires, Parthia, and the origin of, I don't know, I can't read it from here, empires or something else, and then the fifth one here, Israel's tribes today. All right, now that's Stephen M. Collins, Israel's tribes today. Listen to this. The above traits of the British and Americans were also exhibited in ancient Israel and among the Parthians and the Scythians in ancient Israel's tribal allotments. Manasseh received a huge portion of land in one contiguous region. Ephraim received a tiny allotment, even though it was the leading tribe. This tribal division tells us something about the two tribes' temperaments. The people of Manasseh like to stay together in one physical region, and they like wide open spaces. Whereas the Ephraimites were comfortable with a small homeland from which they sent their colonists out to settle new colonies or nations. In ancient Israel's Phoenician Empire, Ephraim retained its small allotment of territory in ancient Israel, but it sent its growing population overseas to settle the Phoenician colonies in Carthage, Spain, and the British Isles. These tribes manifested the same traits in their Asian homelands as well. The tribe of Manasseh, called the Massagetae or the Saki, chose the wide open spaces of the southern Russian steppes as a homeland for their people. The tribe of Manasseh likes elbow room, and they are uncomfortable in small, cramped regions. The tribe of Ephraim, the clans of which founded Parthia, lived among many other nations in the more densely populated regions of Mesopotamia and Medo-Persia. The Scythians were a mighty force that preferred to live and to let live. The Massagetae obliterated a great Persian army led by Cyrus the Great, and they could have conquered and occupied Persia easily after killing Cyrus the Great and destroying his army. They chose not to do so. The Scythians also shattered the Assyrian Empire and conquered all of Asia from Egypt to Iran, but they voluntarily withdrew from all of their conquered territories within a few years. The tribe of Manasseh is an isolationist tribe and manifests no desire or very little desire to rule an empire of foreign nations. Ephraim is exactly the opposite. In ruling over the distant lands of the Phoenician Empire from their capital in Samaria, and in ruling over an empire of diverse nations from their Parthian homeland, the Ephraimites prefer to hold on to the conquered territory and to unite diverse people in a far-flung empire. These traits have been repeated in the modern Messiahite nation known as the United States of America, and the modern Ephraimite nations led by Great Britain called the British Commonwealth. Now, the United States had a world empire within its grasp when it emerged from World War II, virtually unscathed and in sole possession of the atomic bomb. It dominated the Western Hemisphere, and its armies occupied Japan, much of Europe, and most of the Pacific Ocean. Americans, like the ancient Scythians, disdained having an empire. America could have simply informed the entire world that it was imposing a Pax Americana on the world, enforced by its willingness to use the atomic bomb on anyone who dissented. It could have ordered the Soviet Union to disarm and accept American overseers. Instead, America quickly called its troops home to civilian life as soon as the war ended. It mothballed its immense fleets or turned them into scrap metal and sent back to living peacefully within its own borders. This duplicated the Scythians' actions in liberating the Holy Land, Mesopotamia, and Persia from the oppressiveness or the oppressive occupation of the Assyrian Empire and then recalling its armies back to Scythia and civilian life. In the Ephraimite British, they had emerged unscathed from World War II, or if they had, and if they had had sole possession of the atomic bomb, and they were in the position to do so, the ultimatums to other nations would likely have issued in short order. Ephraim and Manasseh are brother tribes with several differences. Manasseh is inward-looking and isolationist. Ephraim is outward-looking and expansionist. However, when the Ephraimites get entangled with wars because of their ready involvement with other nations, the tribe of Manasseh has in the past historically been willing to go to war to assist their Ephraimite brothers. And even as the Parthians and the Scythians were allied brother kinsmen in the ancient world, the British and the Americans have had a special relationship in the modern world. When Parthia needed military help in the ancient world, the Scythians regularly came charging to the rescue as Parthia's ally. The British and the Americans have repeated this Parthian-Scythian tradition. When the British needed military help in World Wars I and II, it was America which came to the rescue. These ancient and modern alliances are no accident. Ephraim and Manasseh are brother tribes who share a common language, a common culture, and common genetics, and they usually act in concert, and they have acted through concert throughout history. What you see going on today in the world is not an accident. It's been going on for thousands of years between the British and the Americans. At this juncture, a few readers may think that these assertions sound like British Israelism, although most readers have never heard that term. British Israelism was a doctrine that developed during the 19th century and the Victorian heyday of the British Empire. Some British Bible scholars correctly saw that the Anglo-Saxons exhibited the characteristics of the birthright tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, and they further saw that the British Empire was expanding its power throughout the world. This led to an expectation by some of them that the British Empire was, or would soon develop into, the kingdom of God on earth. That expectation waned when it became clear that the British Empire would not become the millennial kingdom of God. Although messianic expectations for the British Empire proved incorrect, the evidence that the Anglo-Saxons were the modern tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh has remained as solid as ever. Some very interesting commentary on this subject is found in the Jewish Encyclopedia, which uses the term Anglo-Israelism instead of British Israelism. Anglo-Israelism is based upon an extremely literal interpretation of the Old Testament and by an application of texts brought together from the prophecies about Israel. The Jewish Encyclopedia discusses biblical evidences that the United States of America was in fact Manasseh, the British nations were Ephraim, and their origin was among the Saki and Scythians of Asia, and that Irish Danites brought the Davidic line of Judah to Ireland, along with the famous coronation stone. And the Jewish Encyclopedia quite accurately states that the above views are based on an extremely literal interpretation of the Old Testament and prophecies about Israel. It is a surprisingly frank admission that the Anglo-Israel belief emanates from the faith in the Bible as the infallible, inerrant, literal Word of God. They're absolutely right. One must deny the infallibility and the literality of the Bible to deny that America and the British nations are the birthright Israelite tribes. Now, the Jewish Encyclopedia did not embrace a literal view of the scriptures on this subject, so it did not accept the Anglo-Israel connection. But it does fairly concede the point that the above belief is based on taking the Bible literally. However, there is a modern Jewish scholarship that does not take the Bible literally on this subject and accepts the identification of the Americans and the British as the birthright tribes of Manasseh and Ephraim. Yair Davidi, a Jewish Israeli author and authority, has written several books including The Tribes, Ephraim, Joseph, and Lost Israelite Identity. Affirming these identifications, Davidi's books have been published with supportive rabbinic approbations, and they are recommended to readers of this book. Since their initial struggles in the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, the British-American alliance has dominated world politics from that day to this. Fulfilling the prophecy of Genesis 27, verse 29, birthright promise that nations would bow down to thee. This has been true in both war and in peacetime. Many nations have bowed down to the United States and Great Britain in warfare over the past several centuries. And in the aftermath of World War II, a very large portion of the Earth's territory and population was subject to either the British Empire or the United States, either as colonies, protectorates, or occupied territories. This was the most expansive fulfillment of a prophecy by Moses that Ephraim and Manasseh would dominate people to the ends of the earth, as we see in Deuteronomy 33, verse 17. Now, the British-American alliance was typically merciful and generous to conquered enemies, exhibiting a characteristic of their forefather Joseph, who not only forgave his brothers who sold him into slavery, but generously offered refuge to all of their families. Joseph's trait of wise, benevolent rule was also common among the Scythians and the Parthians, as well as the Goths who conquered the Romans. The example of America's mercy and magnanimous behavior in restoring the people and economies of its former enemies, Japan and Germany, after World War II, is a marvelous modern example of the trait of the tribes of Joseph, who can never forget that after America and Britain occupied much of Germany in World War II, the Americans labored around the clock to feed conquered Germans in the Berlin airlift, necessitated by Russia's grab for power over West Berlin. Now, the United States of America may be the most generous, magnanimous, and merciful nation in the history of our planet. Besides rebuilding and restoring Japan and much of Europe after World War II, the United States has poured mega billions of dollars into nations everywhere around the world, usually without repayment and often without gratitude, in the form of the Marshall Plan, foreign aid, or the Peace Corps. When natural disasters strike anywhere on the planet, American public and private agencies rushed to the scene, offering aid and assistance, even to enemy nations. And when American television depicts suffering and starving people in Ethiopia, Afghanistan, or the Balkans, to name recent examples, it isn't long before American aid rushes to those affected areas. This would indeed be a grim place if Americans were not such a philanthropic people. Indeed, America is generous to a fault. So many nations owing so much to America and American generosity and help are yet frequently anti-American in their policies, and Americans see this, but they simply go on giving anyway. They cannot help it. It is a genetic trait of the tribe of Manasseh and dates back to their forefather, Joseph. Now, in our modern world, the United States of America is in fact fulfilling the birthright promise of Genesis 12, verse 3, which says that in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now, despite many shortcomings, America has historically been a cheerful giver to friends, to enemies, and to neutrals alike, and has shown unparalleled magnanimity toward other nations in this world, as we read in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, states that God loves a cheerful giver. And in Proverbs 10, verse 12, and in 1 Peter 4, verse 8, which mention a divine principle that love covers a multitude of sins. Perhaps this is the reason that God withholds due punishment from America for its parallel role of being the purveyor of immoral, especially entertainment to the world, and God pardons or covers some of America's sins because of its unusually generous and merciful attitude toward other nations. Now, Great Britons are also fulfilled in this promise, that is, in a different way, though. When Ephraimites formed the backbone of the Parthian Empire, they ruled subject nations with wisdom, providing an environment of peace and stability. History records that nations fought the Greeks and the Romans in order to live under the superior rule of the Parthians. Now, this Parthian trait repeated itself when the British, the modern Ephraimites of today, ruled an empire of many nations, providing an environment of peace and stability. In the wave of nationalism that swept the post-war world, many British colonies were granted an independence which proved to be a great curse. Kind of reminds me of Rhodesia. I gotta interject something here. When the British were running Rhodesia, they used to call that Rhodesia, today they call it Zimbabwe, it was an exporter of food. Today, under black rule, they're a net importer of food and they have starvation in the nation. When the British were there, they were blessed. The British have been thrown out and now they're cursed. The Rhodesians and the South Africans now, the tribe of Asher, have gone into national captivity. We'll see that as we progress along. South Africa's whites have now been taken over. The stranger within their gates has risen up high above them and brought them down very low. And in Rhodesia, there's only a few of the white farmers that are still left on the land. They are all being systematically driven out. And they're being driven out because they wouldn't practice the land Sabbaths and the Jubilees, as we see, is a requirement. And we see is the penalty for the violation of land Sabbath and Jubilee law in Leviticus 26, verse 34. Just a cause and effect relationship there between God and the tribe of Asher. The tribe of Asher gave their God the finger, and God said, okay, no hard feelings, business is business, and threw their ass out. And there's where the bottom line is. Now the Australians, New Zealanders, and the Canadians, along with the Americans and Western Europeans, are in the same boat. We're all headed for the same ultimate end. We give our God the finger, and he kicks our ass out. In fact, in Deuteronomy 28, he said, you will not prolong your days in the land. Maybe that's in Deuteronomy chapter 9, but he said, you're not going to prolong your days in the land. Now, you got the promises, you got the blessings, you got the birthright, you got all the benefits. Now comes the day of reckoning. We call them the Lost Tribes of Israel. Remember, this guy's name now is Stephen M. Collins. We're reviewing the book, Israel's Tribes Today. You can get a copy of this book. It's probably about $20. You send him a $20 bill, tell him that you want Israel's Tribes Today, Stephen M. Collins, and send your request to 3901 Crescent Drive, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Tell him George Gordon is reviewing your book, Mr. Collins. Send me a copy. Here's a $20 bill. That's Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 57106. Stephen Collins, let's get it again. 3901 Crescent Drive, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 57106. Now, the book is published by, there's a company here that puts this book out. It's called Bible Blessings. I got a webpage too. It's called www.BibleBlessings.net. P.O. Box 1778, Royal Oak, Michigan, 48068. That's Royal Oak, Michigan, 48068. Bible Blessings, P.O. Box 1778, Royal Oak, Michigan, 48068. They're not going to autograph the book, and they're not going to send you the other three or four, but if you want to order it from the publishing house, that's the place to order it. I ordered mine directly from the author. I don't know very many famous people in the world, but I do know one author. signed all five of my books and did it all for a $100 bill. I'd recommend that you read all five. These are dynamite. Probably the best author with the most information. And the thing I like the most, I think, about this particular author is the bibliography and the citations. I mean, this guy has citations of citations of citations that he has researched out. This guy has done his homework. This is where the rubber meets the road. Now, many of these nations had so little capacity to govern themselves that they have been prey for despots ever since. Their standard of living and quality of life would be far higher today if they had remained British protectorates. Even as their forefather Joseph could successfully manage the affairs of Potiphar's household, Pharaoh's prison, and the entire nation of Egypt with all of its resources, so the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh have inherited Joseph's ability to manage and to organize large enterprises. Hey, you take a look at the large enterprises in the world today, like the Bechtel Corporation. I mean, we can sit here and piss and moan about Halliburton and Brown and Root and Guy F. Atkinson, or Enron, Exxon Mobil, or these giant multinational corporations. But boys and girls, there isn't any group of nations in the world that has a standard of living like we Anglo-Saxons. And particularly the British and the Americans. Now, you take the navies of these two countries. You take our armies. You take our technologies, our shipbuilding capacities. Hey, listen. The Japanese are taking over. The Chinese are taking over. But you want to remember, who was it that invented it? Where did it come from? Now, that's quite a family history. That's something to be pretty, pretty proud of, I would say. I'm going to put a mark right here in the book. We're going to have to stop right here. I'm just about out of time. We'll take it up here again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Going through Israel's tribes today, next time, on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and the Law School, please go to our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, our time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.